from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News. Listen.
We wanted a white Christmas. We didn't have much snow right up till Christmas time. The big one came Christmas Eve, and we got more than we asked for.
A very heartening forecast. It looks as though perhaps we're finally coming out of the tunnel.
Kids are killing each other for material things. We're going to give them those materials if they give us their gun.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's world news.
Somewhere in this country, this very day, disaster struck.
We've got a gas explosion here.
In fact, a disaster strikes somewhere every single day.
The Bonner Bridge collapsed today, stranding hundreds.
Which means every single night, someone needs food, shelter, and a place to rest.
Hungry people trapped here. We need food and blankets.
You can make a difference.
Hundreds evacuated due to flooding of the low-lying areas.
Please, support the American Red Cross. Call 1-800-842-2200. Because every night is another night. Someone needs your help.
Bring him over. Put him down over here.
Everything's going to be fine. You're going to be okay.
Call 1-800-842-2200. This message is brought to you by the American Red Cross and the Ad Council.
New Year. The dawning of 1994 brings with it, like all New Years, the hope that the future will not only be good, but better than the past. That we'll enjoy peace and prosperity, and of course, that we'll keep our New Year's resolutions.
To try to lose some weight so I can feel better and have more energy, and to get up a little earlier and get some the everyday things done.
We bought a treadmill, and I want to make sure I go on it at least 2 miles every day. Okay, we'll say 6 days a week.
I'm only going to try to lose 1 pound this year.
We're running the New Year's resolutions at the beginning of the program this year in case they're no longer valid by the time we finish. But we expect this man in Wichita will try very hard to keep his resolution.
I was only having sex like 1 or 2 times a week, and if I could boost that up to 6 or 7 times and maybe 2 or 3 times a day, then that'd be great.
Well, there are those who look forward to 1994 a bit more scientifically, of course. Among them, the nation's elementary school students surveyed about what they expect the year to bring by the Weekly Reader. Sandra Macaron is editor.
48% of the kids in grades 4 to 6 said that there would be more homeless people, more crime. 54% said there would be more unlawful use of drugs. So they're very aware of the kinds of problems that are there, and they seem to think it's going to be an ongoing problem.
But with the problems, Macaron found the younger generation had some positive hopes, too.
I think the one thing that was very interesting was that kids in grades 4 to 6 think that women and men will be treated equally in all ways in the future. There is a possibility for a woman to be president, and that there's also a good possibility that we will have a non-white or a person of color as president.
The American Forecaster magazine predicts 1994 will see more doctors making house calls, perhaps working on cholesterol problems, because the magazine also predicts we'll eat more bacon, cheese, and high-fat foods this year. In Britain, legal bookmakers will offer you 250-to-1 odds that Elvis Presley will be found alive. And a British newspaper survey indicates 1994 could be a tough year, another annus horribilis for Queen Elizabeth. ABC's Margot McDermott reports from London.
The poll was by the British newspaper The Observer. It shows 73% of those surveyed don't want to pay for the royal family. Queen Elizabeth gets about $15 million a year from taxpayers for public duties, but the Queen has started to pay some tax. The poll of over 1,000 people across the country shows two-thirds want to keep the monarchy. But most think it's been damaged by recent controversy. The heir to the throne, Prince Charles, is losing public support. Nearly a third of those polled want the crown to go directly to his son, William. Margot McDermott, ABC News, London.
Of course, before beginning 1994, we have to wrap up 1993, a year that ended with a major cold snap. That sound of ice being scraped off a windshield comes not from the wintry north, but from Orlando, Florida, where temperatures dipped below freezing after Christmas.
We wanted a white Christmas. We didn't have much snow right up till Christmas time. We only had, 2 inches of snow. But then the big one came Christmas Eve, and we got more than we asked for.
That's forecaster George Scarry in Buffalo, one of the nation's more traditional cold spots. But nature spread its frozen bounty widely from Peabody, Massachusetts.
When you live in New England, people usually complain and gripe now and then. If they're not complaining, they're not happy. But they're used to it. It's like one of my regular customers now is standing with his sweatshirt and his jacket open. He's used to the cold weather. He'd rather be golfing, I'm sure.
To embarrass Minnesota, which was not in the least embarrassed about being one of the coldest places in America this week. Linnea Nuxala lives there.
You can feel it in your nose hairs. It's hard to explain, but when you breathe in, it just burns, you know? And your face feels really cold instantly. It's like almost like you got frostbitten.
People try to warm themselves by the fireside when it gets that cold, according to Dan Toll of Tower, Minnesota.
You kind of get cabin fever. You don't want to go out too much.
That is, if you have a fireplace. For those who don't, it gets nasty this time of year, according to Clarence Green. He works at a homeless shelter in Washington, D.C.
It's cold outside. It's real cold, so that's why a lot of people just didn't go out yet. Normally, most time, everybody be gone.
Bob Donahue patrolled the frozen streets of Boston looking for people who needed a place to stay.
After dark, when everything is closed down and they don't have a place to seek shelter, that's when it gets really rough and critical out here.
But, all things considered, a white Christmas is pretty nice, according to Janet Nestrick of Erie, Pennsylvania.
I think personally that it's pretty. A lot of people think it's a pain, but I don't know. It's kind of half and half cool because we're used to it around here.
Snow is not good for drivers seeking to escape the cold. Earlier this week, authorities described a traffic jam up to 20 miles long at the southern end of the New Jersey Turnpike, people seeking to head south. Sarah Miller described the honking chaos.
There are cars wall to wall, nothing but cars.
Of course, it's always easier if your car does, in fact, start. That one in Buffalo seemed a little reluctant.
It's got to be absolute zero. I think we made it finally. We finally reached absolute zero.
Where do you go to look for warmth in a cold snap? How about Nome, Alaska, where Kathy Newman will be happy to serve you hot nachos?
It's in the 30s, and it's nice and warm for a change. We've had a lot of cold weather, so today is a nice warm day.
And in Lyons, New York, the cold was good for law enforcement officers trying to catch a suspected burglar. Sheriff Richard Biscotti described what happened.
They tracked this individual for about 4 miles through the snow, and the footprints started getting closer together so that they knew that, you know, apparently he was tiring out and getting hypothermia. They got within probably 25, 30 feet in pitch black darkness in the woods, and finally he called out, "I give up. I'm frozen to death."
This is the week that business people looked at their profits and losses for the year, and the week that you and I returned or exchanged some of our Christmas bounty.
I brought back a jungle gym because my child was in the emergency room yesterday after falling off of it. I brought back assorted things and candies and shavers and everything. So just we got a lot, too much Christmas this year.
A lot of what we bought this year was paid for with plastic money, as Visa and MasterCard reported good business in December. But at least we bought. And ABC Stephen Ogg reports cash registers rang merrily in December.
American retailers had a good holiday shopping season this year. Sales were up by about 5% from a year ago. Analysts say discount stores likely show the biggest increases, with department stores up in the mid-single digits. Household goods were big sellers, things like bed and bath products, but also electronics like computers and tools. If there was one big loser, though, it was clothing stores. Consumers simply didn't like this year's fashions. And even though clothing retailers kept inventories lean, there was plenty of price cutting. And analysts say the discounts on clothing are likely to continue through January. Stephen Ogg, ABC News, Washington.
And what of 1994? Well, the Conference Board, a business think tank, looked at consumer confidence and found it improving rapidly. Spokesman Fabian Linden described the outlook.
A very heartening forecast. It looks as though perhaps we're finally coming out of the tunnel.
Something else to look forward to. The IRS has dispatched mountains of Form 1040s to homes across the nation. IRS Commissioner Margaret Richardson says the tax man will ease up on some folks whose taxes have gone up.
Those few taxpayers whose income levels put them in the new brackets can choose to pay their additional 1993 taxes in three annual interest-free payments.
This week saw not only the celebration of Christmas, but the eight-day observation of Kwanzaa, primarily in America's black communities. Sterling Plump, a professor of African American studies at the University of Illinois Chicago, explains what Kwanzaa is.
Kwanzaa was a way of African Americans affirming their culture, affirming themselves, as well as providing a very viable and healthy alternative to the over-commercialized holiday that's celebrated on the 25th of December.
President Clinton tried to observe a holiday this week, escaping from charges of marital infidelity. He got himself a hunting license, and he went duck hunting in Maryland with Congressman Bill Brewster of Oklahoma. One of those two actually shot a duck.
Give it amnesty.
Give it amnesty? Too late.
Did you get it, Mr. President?
Brewster shot it.
No, the president got it.
But even hiding behind a duck blind, the president could not escape controversy. Wayne Pacelli speaks for the Fund for Animals.
This is a statement that he is making that animal cruelty is okay, and in fact, it has the presidential seal of approval. Our letter said that we think that is terrible and that animal activists across the country are not going to forget about this in 1996 or any time in between.
The president also headed home to Arkansas briefly for, among other things, a dental checkup. And then to South Carolina, where for years he's attended an event called Renaissance Weekend. Weekend co-founder Linda Later says some people might not recognize the president.
I didn't give him a name tag because I knew he wouldn't wear one saying Mr. President. And if he wore one that said Bill Clinton, it would be irresistible for some people to call him Bill. So I just took that away from him.
While Mr. Clinton was vacationing, his Secretary of State, Warren Christopher, promoted an old presidential pal, Strobe Talbot, to the number two job at the State Department. Talbot has been a diplomatic troubleshooter in Russia.
I relish the chance to broaden out a bit and to be part of what I see as the great adventure of the United States trying to lead the rest of the world in building a true post-Cold War international security order.
A lot of disorder across America this week. In a mall in Irving, Texas, Kevin Bacon had just sat down in the food court for some lunch with his family when two gangs nearby started shooting at each other. Police spokeswoman Sydney Gomez.
Two groups were arguing about something earlier. We don't know what that argument was about. And it looks like it just continued on over into the food court and the one male subject just opened fire on the other two.
Bacon was buried at week's end. Police had some shooters in custody. In Spokane, Washington, people found a new way to celebrate Christmas, not by singing carols, but by shooting out car windows. Jeff Duchesne's car was one target.
We didn't know what to think of it at first, but I think somebody was just being stupid. I hear just must have had a bad Christmas or something. That's what I was thinking.
Indeed, the national concern over guns on the street carries over into 1994. Just after the ball fell in New York's Times Square, the national death clock began ticking just across the street. The clock keeps statistical track of the number of gun-related deaths in America, minute by minute. Businessman Robert Brennan is paying for it.
Right now, the current statistical data is that there's over 200 million guns in private circulation today. That's growing at the rate of one new gun being manufactured and sold every 5.5 seconds. Shocking numbers. Last year, over 35,000 Americans died as a result of guns. That's one every 14 minutes.
A bizarre case of love gone wrong in Western New York this week. It left 5 people dead and 2 others injured. The victims, all members of one family, opened packages in their homes, only to find they were filled with dynamite. In Hogansburg, New York, Joe Drexel lives next door to one bombing victim.
I was in the living room when I heard this boom, and then I heard a whole bunch of glass breaking, and I came outside, and I seen, smoke coming out of their window, and their, refrigerator was, knocked over in front of it.
Authorities said one man who blamed the family for a breakup with his girlfriend had shipped the bombs. He and a friend who helped him face the death penalty under federal law because they allegedly transported explosives across state lines. Crime is a fact of life in the new Russia, as we saw in a kidnapping case that was wrapped up this week. ABC's Jennifer Glass reports from Moscow.
Russian radio is reporting that all 4 men who kidnapped a group of teenagers Thursday have been captured in southern Russia. The men gradually let the teenagers go after they received $10 million ransom money from the Russian government. Their original request was to go to Iran, but they abandoned a military helicopter and the 2 pilots they were holding captive and fled into the Caucasus Mountains. The Atartas news agency said $6.5 million was recovered when the first 2 men were captured, and Interfax said most of the rest of the money was recovered with the other 2 men. Jennifer Glass, ABC News, Moscow.
And in New York, an effort to get some of the guns off the streets. Businessman Fernando Mateo began exchanging gift certificates for guns.
Kids are killing each other for sneakers. Kids are killing each other for starter jackets. Kids are killing each other for material things. We're going to give them those materials if they give us their gun.
By week's end, Mateo's program had brought in hundreds of guns. Only a tiny fraction of the estimated million guns in the Big Apple. But lawyer Joseph Azar, who lives in Mateo's neighborhood, said every little bit helps.
Drug dealing gangs are not turning their guns in for $100 certificates to buy toys. That's not to say that this is bad. The number of guns they've gotten is good. It's good that they're off the street.
In the midst of death, life, specifically in Chicago, where a woman this week gave birth to an apparently healthy baby son. Tabita Breachy had fought a government recommendation that she have a cesarean section. Her husband Michael said their religion demanded natural childbirth.
I said no. We said no. Because we believed God would have delivered us a healthy baby through a normal delivery, and his name will be praised in this.
Cook County Public Guardian Patrick Murphy, who had fought for the cesarean section, said he's glad the case had a happy ending.
This is the type of case you love to be proven wrong in, and of course we're very, very happy that the child is born alive and at least first blush physically healthy.
But controversy arose over some other babies born this week. Twins to a woman over 60 years old, born as the result of artificial insemination. Medical ethicist Dr. Joe Finns said such births to elderly women raise troubling questions that have not been answered.
I don't think society can adequately respond to all of this. I think, in a sense, it's the flip side of teenage pregnancy and all the problems that created, but at the other end of the biological spectrum.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson returned home this week from Cuba, where he talked with diehard communist leader Fidel Castro. Jackson told reporters he'd been able to gain assurance that Castro's 16-year-old granddaughter would be allowed to join her mother as an exile in Miami.
Now that the family has given that consent, I was reassured just this morning it is a matter of time before the daughter and the mother will be reunited.
And indeed, Castro's granddaughter landed in Miami Friday morning. Five other Cubans made it to Florida by a more difficult route this week. ABC's Peter Dench reports.
The five men fled Cuba in a tire and wood raft. They rode for 4 days amid strong winds. On Christmas Eve, their bread, cheese, and water fell overboard. By Christmas morning, they were still only 20 miles off the coast of Cuba. Four ships had passed them by. Then a fifth wandered by on Christmas Day. A brightly lit ship, the Sea Breeze, filled with hundreds of holiday passengers returning from a Caribbean cruise. Some keen-sighted passengers spotted the rafters and cheered as the ship turned around to pick them up and take them to the port of Miami, where they asked for political asylum. Peter Dench, ABC News, Miami.
Continued controversy this week over explosive revelations by Energy Secretary Hazel O'Leary about nuclear research carried out after World War II. It was reported that 36 mentally retarded boys had been fed radioactive cereal without their informed consent in one such experiment in Massachusetts. State spokesman Jerry Ryan says his government is concerned about the revelations.
We're very concerned wanting to make sure that there was that we do everything we can to help the individuals who may have been part of the study.
The Association for Retarded Citizens, through spokeswoman Liz Moore, was much more blunt in its assessment of the research.
Absolutely unacceptable. It's appalling. It's terrible.
The federal government made it clear this week that it intends to take the Americans with Disabilities Act seriously, filing its first lawsuit under the legislation. ABC's John Bascom explains the case.
For municipal police or fire officers in Illinois to qualify for a pension or disability benefits, they have to join the pension board, and that involves passing a physical. In Aurora, Illinois, two officers currently on active duty couldn't pass the physical, so they couldn't join the pension board and couldn't qualify for pensions or disability payments, even though they're now in uniform. The Justice Department is saying, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, which bans discrimination on the basis of disabilities, the city of Aurora, Illinois, is breaking the law. John Bascom, ABC News, Washington.
And the government this week offered hope to the many thousands of Americans who suffer from cystic fibrosis, a disease of the lungs that always kills before the age of 30. The FDA says it's licensed the drug Denace, which will be marketed under the trade name Pulmozyme, and scientists say it offers real improvement in the quality of life for CF patients. Dr. Stephen Schack, who headed the team that developed the drug, explains what it does.
It is not a cure. We have created a drug which acts like molecular scissors. It chops up the thick mucus in the airways and improves breathing and reduces infections and hospitalizations.
It seems amazing that it took so long, but this week the Vatican and the State of Israel took final steps to establish diplomatic relations. Archbishop William Keeler, president of the National Conference of Catholic Bishops, hailed the agreement.
Catholic and Jewish Americans can welcome together the normalizing of relations between the Holy See and the State of Israel, which today's signing sets in motion. With this event, we take a major step forward in the dialogue of reconciliation between the Roman Catholic Church and the Jewish people.
Some goodbyes and a very goodbye when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Imagine if drug abusers said exactly what was on their minds.
Hi, Jim, you got a minute?
Only if it's a quick minute, Steve.
Well, it's the Anderson file. We should talk about it.
No, listen, I'd love to, but I was just about to snort some coke.
Why'd you say snort coke?
That's right, cocaine. You know, blow, nose candy. I do it all day.
Not your typical office conversation, but consider this. 1 in 7 working Americans uses illegal drugs.
But what about the Anderson file?
Tell you what, let me duck into the men's room, do a couple of lines, and I'll be right with you.
Of course, drug abusers aren't this candid about their problem, but sooner or later, their problem speaks for itself.
Okay, got my head cleared. Now, about that Peterson file.
Anderson file, Jim.
What can you do for someone who needs help? Give them this number, 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. It's the number of the National Drug Abuse Helpline. It's free, it's confidential, and it just may be the help they need. This message brought to you by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
America said goodbye to Dr. Norman Vincent Peale this week. The preacher who taught the power of positive thinking to generations was laid to rest with services at his Marble Collegiate Church in New York City. Another American who thought positively was Dave Beck. The former Teamsters president died in Seattle at the age of 99. In a recent interview, Beck described his early days as a Teamsters organizer.
90% of your fights in those days, particularly in the trucking industry, was knock somebody off a truck before they knocked you off. And that's how you won.
We in the broadcast news business lost one of our greatest this week, William Shirer, who covered World War II with Edward R. Murrow, and who later wrote the monumental Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, died at the age of 89. His colleague, Howard K. Smith, remembered Shirer.
He was undoubtedly the best foreign correspondent in Berlin during the war and just before the war. And I think he and Murrow were probably the two best reporters of all the war reporters during the war.
This next is a bit happier goodbye, and it's to someone most of our listeners don't know. Bob Geraghty retired this week. If you've heard Bob's name at all, perhaps you remember him as America's very first airborne traffic reporter, covering the highways and byways over New York in the 1950s. For the last 20 years, he's been our assignment editor at ABC Radio News. And this week, he fielded his last phone call from one of our affiliated radio stations. Always the professional, always the gentleman. We'll miss Bob Geraghty a lot around here, but we hope this retirement for him is long and happy. A couple of folks in Medford, Wisconsin could probably have retired if they weren't so honest. They bought an old piano from the estate of a man who died in October and turned it over to piano tuner Dan Sherida for renovation. Dan started rooting around inside the piano, and inside he found cobwebs, dust, and $140,000.
Oh, there's always something in an old piano. But no, never in my wildest dreams I'd figure that there'd be something like that.
The piano tuner and the owners turned all that money over to the estate of the man who died. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Stu Chamberlain. Engineering by Tien Truong. Audio library services by Ann Mounty, Cheryl Kutzner, and Marge Tashina. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News, New York.
More Americans get their news from ABC News than from any other source.